Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam International with me, Sister Faiza Munshi. On this beautiful Sunday morning, we have a panel discussion for today. I'm sure many of you have seen on the social media post that we are having this panel discussion this morning with two very, very interesting women, alhamdulillah. Today we're talking about coming to Allah, coming to Deen, the reversion to Islam, and the story of two amazing women, inshallah. I'm not going to waste any time because I think we need a lot of time to discuss this topic, and an hour is not even enough, certainly not enough. So I'm going to start off by introducing my guests, inshallah, and then get right into the program with this discussion, talking about coming to Islam, reverting to Islam. What are some of the things that we need to learn from those who have come into our deen? What is it that we need to be doing in order to be able to bring people to deen? And what is it that we need to change about ourselves, perhaps? And what is it that we need to learn about the beauty of this deen as well? First, I'd like to introduce my first guest, alhamdulillah, Sister Khadija Taylor. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Sister Khadija.
Wa alaikum salam.
It's wonderful to have you on, and we've got an amazing story, but I'd just like to greet our second panelist first, which is Sister Rehana. Assalamu alaikum, Rehana.
Wa alaikum salam.
So it's wonderful having you both on air, and I would love to do an introduction for our listeners, but I think it would be a lot better coming from you in terms of talking about where you've come from, you know, in terms of our deen. What is it? Now, I'm going to start with you, Sister Khadija. Your journey was a very interesting journey of learning, one of learning many religions on this whole process of coming to deen, from Christianity to like being in an ashram to, you know, being in a space of not understanding who God is, so to speak, and then eventually coming to deen. I have to ask you the question, and I wish, like I said, we'll need an hour just to discuss where you've come from in terms of your journey, right? But I want to ask you, first of all, to start off today's panel, is that what eventually, through your whole process of knowing so many religions, learning religions from Hinduism to ashrams to the Greek Orthodox to Christianity, what made Islam so attractive to you after all your years of studying and searching?
You know, I always say that, you know, us reverts don't become Muslims because of other Muslims. We become Muslims because we search for truth. And once we find the truth, we've now got to find purpose and meaning in our lives. But basically, I think from a very young age, there was always, you know, the fear of God was instilled in me. So there was always a deep yearning to please Allah, to please God, and to walk on a truthful path. But unfortunately, you know, you don't come across Islam in those days. You mm-hmm. didn't come across Islam, maybe as we should have come across Islam. But, you know, everything is according to Allah's will, our journey that we do take. And, you know, I also need to tell you that my family actually converted to Judaism. Okay. And so, you know, there was a lot of religion around us, a lot of religion, and I was just trying to find something that was more, that was more gentle, that was much more approachable, because I did find Judaism was a difficult religion. Mm. It was a very difficult religion, and there was so much you had to do. You know, just to put in context, it took my brother about 5 years to become a Jew.
Wow.
You know, so the path was difficult.
Yes. And you look at the aspect of coming to deen, it is literally, besides obviously the journey before as well as the learning after, but the actual process is one that would take literally a few minutes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. You know, and, you know, as my whole journey was really just, what really appealed to me about Islam was the beauty, the art and the beauty of Islam. This is what first of all attracted me. And of course, when I had to do research into this because of my art, when I did research into the geometrical and symmetrical designs, mm-hmm. you come across Islam. So once
that was very interesting when I heard you at an event recently, and I heard you talk about this. We'll talk later on in the program about the idea of how many of us being born into Islam do not appreciate some of these things. But the idea that it took geometric design for you to come into learning about Islam is a very interesting twist in your story.
Well, totally. And you know, to me, Islam is not only a religion, it's a civilization. Mm. And because I've always loved history, you know, at one point in my schooling, history was the only subject I was passing. And because I've always loved history, once I delved into this, into what geometrical designs really mean, where do they come from, what is the history behind them, I came across the civilization of Islam. And when I an ocean, a drop in the ocean of what a magnificent civilization this is and was, I thought, this is it.
Now, this is so different, Johanna. I'm going to come to you now because it's important to be, that we have this discussion literally between the three of us because, Johanna, your journey, I mean, Khadija started off by saying we don't come to Islam because of Muslims, but we come to Islam because of what we are searching for.
Yes.
But, Johanna, your story, on the other hand, is literally contrasting to this. Am I right, sir?
You are right. You know, there's so many answers that I've given to this exact question about why I became Muslim, and you know, all of them are actually correct. Was it because of love? Yes. Was it because Islam answered all of the questions that I've had my entire life as a Hindu, that, you know, I was never satisfied with the answers? It's true to that also. Is it because I did a whole lot of research and I came to understand what Islam meant and where it came from and how it is practiced? The answer to that is also yes. But the truth is that, you know, every time I thought of becoming a Muslim, my answer was always just no. I just never wanted to do it. And then one day I was able to, and that really was, you know, Allah granting you hidayat.
So, and when we chatted in the week, you said to me, you said, Father, it's not about how much it's, yes, you learn and you search and you do all of this, but there's this moment where Allah just literally, you said to me, Rihanna, is that, an understanding of somebody who's perhaps born Muslim and doesn't understand this idea of being given hidayat, it's like you feel that. You feel that in the moment when you feel that, you know, okay, this is what I want. This is what
this is the moment when all your resistance towards it starts to go away.
Mm.
And, you know, that's the defining moment, really. And however you got to that moment is unique for each person, but I think that moment is when you know, your decision is made.
So, Khadija, does that moment that Rihanna's talking about resonate with you as well, in terms of Allah granting hidayat, in that, you know, that feeling of this is just right?
You know, I'd come out of Hinduism and I'd studied Hinduism for 18 years. So been to India many times, and Hinduism was like the last sort of religion I'd participated in and dedicated my life to. I lived in an ashram, I took an oath of celibacy, you know, so there was this deep search. However, when I left the ashram, you know, I said when I sent you a WhatsApp of my bio data is, you know, I felt like I had been abandoned by God. And what I really want to say to your listeners is, you know, if you have a vision of yourself, don't give up on that vision. But however, the vision that Allah has for us is so much greater. Because I delved into, you know, positive thinking, visualization. I studied how the brain reacts to visualization. And so, you know, so many years have been spent in this vision of trying to find truth, trying to find God. And then I found myself in this, like I felt God had abandoned me. And I'm using the word God because I need to just put it in context of my life then. And so I felt that God had abandoned me. But I had spent a year of fasting, meditating, pleading with God that please, don't abandon me. Let your vision fall on me once again. And, you know, you just can't fathom the vision that Allah does have of you. So the moment that I felt, the I actually watched a program by Yusuf Islam, and when he spoke and he just shared his whole story, I immediately said, that's what I want. I want to become a Muslim. That is it. And of course, in my search to become a Muslim in those days was not easy. But however, the moment I took Shahada, I was just so thankful that there was only one God.
Yes, absolutely. So how long, what is your journey? How many years ago have you embraced Islam?
I would say it's about 8 years ago.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think every soul on this planet yearns to have a connection with one God.
Mm.
And unfortunately, what has happened is people have got in the way. Other religions have got in the way. So when you do take Shahada, as when you do become a Muslim, you know, it's that aha moment. I felt so liberated.
I felt so
free.
It's exactly what Rihanna said now. I mean, it literally feels like it's two different roads to get to the absolute same end point, but it's an end point that is a new beginning, you know.
Yes.
It is that point where this is now the new start. I want to go to my next question with regard to this. I want to try, I know it's a short period of time we have for this discussion, but I want to try and put in as much information in today's program for our listeners that are listening, from the two of you, from your sisters, that, you know, I have got this experience. Rihanna, I want to come to the question of, you've got Hidayah, you've taken your Shahada. The journey that continues thereafter, what is the learning? What are some of the learning curve that you had, some of the stumbling blocks to learning, but also perhaps some of the moments where, you know, you felt that you've had the greatest amount of learning? Where does that sit with you in terms of learning about Deen?
I think that what was most challenging was that I was fortunate that my husband and I were on the same mindset, that we really wanted to follow the sunnah of the Prophet and follow the hadith and simplify it in that way. And I think that was a decision he needed to make as well, because he knew that I was a revert and I also questioned a lot of things. Remember, I was leaving behind a religion that couldn't answer my questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of the reason of becoming a Muslim and the beauty of Islam is that you can get an answer and you can get it today.
Absolutely.
You know, if you want to know something, there's enough learned people out there, and the documentation of Islam and how everything was revealed is really very simple.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with tradition and with culture and with, you know, different moving across different countries, I think that our traditional practices have sort of become a little bit interwoven.
Absolutely. And it's been intertwined in many ways in terms of what is culture, what is religion.
Exactly. And I think specifically amongst the Indian culture,
mm-hmm.
as a Hindu, there are things that were religious to me that is just maybe a cultural practice amongst Muslims. And there was that little bit of confusion, and that's why, you know, we decided that we are really just going to follow the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. The Quran and the Hadith, and it was a very simplified approach. The challenge obviously came when that, you know, contradicted family practices and things like that. And I think that's where a lot of reverts have challenges. And I think, really, if you are a family that is welcoming a revert into your family, your first step should be, you know, as you are being asked questions on how to do things, you should be able to answer exactly like that. Whatever I'm telling this person, is that the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ? Is it in the hadith? If it's not, then are we really doing the right thing? And I think that was the main challenge.
I just want to ask, I want to clear this up. Is it that the practices have been interwoven so people are not sure if it's culture or religion, or is it that as people who perhaps are born Muslim, we need to educate ourselves enough to understanding what is right, what is wrong, and so that if a revert comes to us, we need to be able to give the correct answers.
Absolutely. And I think also when you are asked a question, not to just answer based on how things were always done. Although I must add that there's some things that if you were born a Muslim, you would never have to answer for. For example, changing your name, you know, as a revert, you know, whether you need to change your name or not. If you were born a Muslim, this is not a question you would ever have to research or know about. But if you're a revert, it is something that you have to research and know about. So I think that a family welcoming a revert or a community welcoming a revert needs to have answers to these questions and make sure that we are answering in the correct way. And to also have a little bit of understanding that the situation that a revert is in is not the same situation that you are
in. Absolutely.
You know, when you are talking about intermingling with non-Muslims and all of that, it's easy for a Muslim to say, I'm going to separate, you know, one from the other. But a revert cannot separate that. The revert's entire family is non-Muslim.
Yes,
so if you're going to put conditions on that, you're actually putting them in a very difficult position and also unnecessarily.
Yeah. Let's get, Sister Khadija, let me get your view on this in terms of what Sister Rehana has mentioned now. It's very, very pertinent points and very important points in terms of the fact that as perhaps born Muslim, we may not think about these issues of, you know, whether you need to change your name, have certain questions that we may never have thought about. But she makes this point also, you know, towards the end here where she says, you know what, sometimes we say we have these conditions of you're not allowed to, or perhaps you need to cut yourself off from non-Muslims, but your non-Muslims are then your family. What have you experienced in terms of all of this that Rehana has also mentioned in her life?
Okay, it's very interesting because with religion being in my family for such a long time, and my brother became Jewish, Orthodox Jew, so, you know, automatically there were certain things that he did not participate in. And then, of course, because I was a separate vegetarian living in an ashram, I also, there were certain things that, you know, I just didn't partake of. So that my family was used to that to a certain extent. But what you've got to realize is that Islam has bad, Islam has negative publicity.
Yes.
And, you know, immediately when your family hear you've become a Muslim, they're like, oh, my Lord. You know, I remember my son, when I had to tell my oldest son that I'd become a Muslim. And he said to me, he said, are you sure? Are you sure about this? Wouldn't you rather become a Jew? And he said, you know, Mom, this is a very chauvinistic religion. You will never find a husband now. And I was like, so, I mean, it's humorous. But that, you know, somehow that is what was fed to him. However, I think it's really your example. I remember going to one of my first family do's. I had my bio on. And, you know, you think the whole world is going to welcome you. But you break people's preoccupation when you are so different. And you walk into this family do. And you are very different all of a sudden. So people, you know, they don't know how to interact with you. So it's really just a learning of how to interact with you. And what I find is, you know, with my immediate family, I tell them a lot of the really positive, beautiful things about Islam. Not that there isn't any, but, you know, I really share, because all my children are married, they've all got children, and I just share the, you know, the interactions between husband and wife, how you treat your children, what are the du'as for protection, and, you know, they resonate. They resonate with it, and they all say, oh, that is so beautiful, you know. And but the challenge is when you go to a do where there's more than just your immediate family. And me being a mother, you know, I need to attend these. So I do go as an ambassador for Islam. But it is a challenge. It is a challenge because they do, you know, they do separate you from the rest of the crowd. And, you know, what is the word I can use? You know, you've just got to phosphate. That's the word I can use. You know, you phosphate, you tolerate, and you go there with a heart full of love and kindness.
I guess you look at situations with a very open mind when you're in a situation like yourself and Sister Rehana. It's not, you cannot go into any, I guess, you know, event or family affair or family journey that you go in with a closed mind. But we'll talk more about this. We're going to take a bit of an ad break right now. I want to talk more about the idea of sort of dealing with occasions, dealing with festivals, and daily interactions with our Muslims, non-Muslims, etc., and what it is we can do to attract people to Islam. For now, a short break. Stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome back to Radio Islam International. This is Sister Faiza Munshi and my guest, Sister Khadija Taylor, Sister Rehana Karim, both talking to us about the reversion to Islam, some of the stumbling blocks that they may have, the journey that they experience, as well as some of the good, the stuff that they learn along the way, that they can teach us as well along the way, inshallah. So, Sahirya, Sister Rehana, Jazakallah for being with us once again. It's wonderful chatting to you. It's so enlightening to have to hear, you know, stories firsthand from people who have come into Deen, who understand both sides of the story, so to speak. And so for many of us, we need to understand what is it that you experience through the journey, and through this program, understand what it is that we can do to make the journey easier, and perhaps also certain things that we can do in order to make this the whole process something more pleasant, as well as maybe looking at some of our own stumbling blocks as well. So, Khadija, I want to talk about the question of, you know, we spoke about the aspect of learning earlier on, and how is it that we come to learn? I know your journey has been very different in terms of learning so much beforehand. Once you have come into Deen, you now interact both with rebirth and those that were born Muslim. I want to ask the difficult question for many of us that are listening and may not want to hear the answer. Do you often believe, and do you meet people who you feel take our Deen for granted in terms of learning?
Oh, totally, 100%. In fact, the just one thing I do want to say is that I just find a lot of Muslims don't know their religion. And I had a conversation, I was sitting having a conversation with my youngest son, and we were chatting about the Deen. And I happened to say to him, I said, you know, I find a lot of Muslims don't really know their religion. Mm. And he said to me, Mark, exactly. He said they really don't. Now, here is a person I thought would never, ever be aware of this at all. Mm. And so he said, yes, they don't know their religion. And it's like the other sister said, you know, there is so much of the Hindu culture, there's so much of the Indian culture that is in the religion. And one thing I do want to say is, and, you know, being a white revert, you must understand, at a lot of our family social events, there is the aspect that, you know, and I mean this with such due respect, but there's still, you know, quite a lot of racism in the white community. Mm. And it's a subtle thing I talk about. It's a subtle thing. So when you become a Muslim, they think this is an Indian religion. And having spent so much time in Hinduism and in an ashram, and having left it, I think my family thought, oh, you know, we've won her back. Thank God, this is wonderful. And then you become a Muslim, and it's almost like, you know, you're back in the Indian religion. And I say this with such due respect. We need to change this perspective or this view that people think it's an Indian religion.
This is something that is predominantly a South African thing in terms of perhaps, you know, and I see that. Many of us do. And it's amazing when you come to communities, for example, like we are in, and Rehana will perhaps be able to speak about this as well, is being able to be in a community where the masjid is very cosmopolitan, where the children at the madrasa are perhaps more cosmopolitan. Yes. It's a very eye-opening experience, and in terms of children growing up with that, it's very important that they grow up with that, because then they don't see it. I mean, if you look at younger children in terms of course, the generation we are from, the older generation, like you said, Sister Khadija, may have this view of Islam being, you know, an Indian religion. But as we move forward, and I'll just bring Sister Rehana into the conversation here, is that we live in communities that are more cosmopolitan, and the masjids are more cosmopolitan, and the madrasa systems may be, you know, having kids from different, you know, from my experience, there's kids from different areas of the world, first of all, and then there's also kids with very different family backgrounds at the moment. different. So it's not like it used to be where everyone comes from a household where there's a mother and father, they're both married. There's a lot of diversity in terms of a mom being a Christian, a dad being a Muslim, etc. And so I do think that with time, perhaps, that may change.
Absolutely.
I just want to bring Rihanna, in terms of what your experience has been and what I've been mentioning now, you've got kids as well in the community that I'm in, so to speak, and how do you see this aspect in terms of, you know, Islam being an Indian religion, and from my perspective of the fact that as we move forward, we may be actually be able to change this in our children's view because of whom they get to interact with on a daily basis?
I think being in Africa changes things quite a bit for us, because if you look at the continent as a whole, if you look at South Africa as a whole, you can very clearly see that Islam is not an Indian religion. I think what needs to change is that the Indian community themselves needs to be more open and welcoming to people that are not Indian within the Muslim community. And I think that definitely needs to change. As much as we are in our areas, and yes, definitely in the area I live in, things are more cosmopolitan, the madrasas are a bit more mixed, it is still predominantly Indian. And I think our interactions then are limited, and that's something we need to look at changing with our children.
Okay. And talking about interactions, I want to come to my next question. We've got like 20 minutes left of today's program. We'll cover one or two more questions before we end. And so I want to look at this aspect of interaction. We talk about interaction of our children with different people of different races, yet the same Islamic background, which is important for us to actually, I don't think for kids they don't see it, but for us as parents, we need to make that interaction, like you're saying, we need to, you know, create that open mindset and accept people more and not keep it as such a close thing. When it comes to daily interactions, now we've moved towards, you know, perhaps not moving towards our kids, but looking at our daily interactions with employers, employees, colleagues, etc. What are some of the things that we could be doing? And this is important for today's program in terms of looking forward as well. We'll look at some of the challenges. We also want to look at what is it in our daily life that we are doing that is creating, I'm going to start first with the negatives, right, for both Rihanna as well as Sister Khadija, and then we'll move to the positives. What are some of the interactions that we are having in our daily lives that are creating a very negative mindset for people about our deen?
I think the first negative thing that we're doing, I think, when dealing with non-Muslims is the lack of interaction. I think that we, for people that are not everybody, because obviously I have become a Muslim from my interactions with as a non-Muslim with a Muslim. But I think that my impression that I get is that non-Muslims are not, unless you have a long-standing friendship, a childhood friendship or a community relationship, people are not always able to ask a Muslim a controversial question. I don't know what has created that or what has caused that. But I know that as a revert, you know, I still kept my name. So when people see a non-Muslim name and then a Muslim surname, a lot of people come to you to ask me what my story is. And then I'm getting asked a lot of questions about the negative aspects of Islam. You know, you get asked questions about terrorism. You get asked questions about how women have no rights. And you get asked a lot of questions about the Prophet ﷺ. And, you know, there's a lot of negative things about him on social media, and you get asked about all of those things, and I think people just feel a little bit easier, and I'm not too sure why people are not necessarily comfortable to ask that of a Muslim. So I don't know.
Yeah, could you perhaps give us some insight on that?
Okay, you know, first of all, what I find is, yes, the Muslims are not approachable, but it's not their fault. Something that dawned on me the other day, and that was, what was the fall of the Ottoman Empire? It was when the world actually came up with two aspects, nationalism, and they came up with materialism. When I talk about materialism, I talk about where the world made religion look like superstition. And because we do, our dress portrays religion, automatically the world stands back. And it's because of media. I certainly believe it is because of media. Because when I sometimes share with my youngest son, he's saying, "Ma, you know, these are old-fashioned ideas." You know, Ma, the world has evolved. This is, you know, Mama, I don't want to delve into an old-fashioned idea.
Because what does he believe are some of the old-fashioned ideas that you may be putting forward to him?
As
an example.
You know what? I can't remember what it was. But, you know, I was telling him, I think, something about it was either protection or you know, something he could do to make his life a bit more comfortable. You know, to him, it was, you know, this is old-fashioned. And this is what the world has done. They have made religion look superstitious. And not only that, in context of the Muslims, you know, people don't realize that we are such a big force. When I was working in an advertising company, I had an office with them, and I was fasting one Ramadan, and of course, one of my colleagues said to me, you know, this is incredible that you're fasting. And she said to me, you know, there's so few people who could do this. And I turned around, I said, Katie, you know that there are almost 2 billion of us
doing the same thing.
She almost fell off her chair. She thought, well, there's only about 20 of them, you know, that are fasting. So the media, to me, what has actually happened is the media has made it a negative thing. And, you know, we've just got to work at it. We just, because we've got so much to offer the world.
It's so interesting to see that media makes Islam look like a difficulty. So if you look at the 30 days of fasting in Ramadan, you go to a school that is not that has not experienced this, and you've had you take your grade 1 or grade 2 child, and you say to the teacher, you know, my child will be fasting for this month of Ramadan, and it's almost like, what are you doing to your children? Yet in the media now, we look at this whole process of how the Sunnah of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has come in a different form. There's a new whole health theory about intermittent fasting.
Right.
It's the theory itself is literally saying to people, do not eat anything for this period of time in order to ensure that your body cleanses itself. And so it's so interesting, just because there's this negative connotation. If you say to people, we're doing intermittent fasting in Ramadan, they're, oh, wow, that is amazing, you know. And if you say to people, I'm fasting because I'm a Muslim, and there's 2 billion of us fasting, they want to fall off a chair, which begs the question of how is it that we are going to create a positive view of our deen from something like the month of Ramadan and fasting to start off with, because it's such a practical example, to moving towards that which we do that is not so obvious. Sister Khadija, in terms of that, I mean, just your interaction, you know, your comment on the fact that we, as a community, as a society, that's exactly what's happened, right?
You know what, it's just all these little drops that each Muslim can do to educate people is so important, to put people's paradigms, to give them a paradigm shift is so important. So, yes, we do need to reach out. We do need to be a bit more approachable. And I want to share a story with you very quickly.
Sure.
Tiger Brands is one of my clients, and I went off to Tiger Brands the other day. We're sitting in their very, ornate, their reception area. And I was sitting there, and I had my abaya on. I had my niqab on. I was sitting, and everybody was on their phones, and they were busy, and all of a sudden, this very, very busy man, a white gentleman, got up. He rushed over to me, and he said, I've noticed you're a white, and you must be a Muslim. I said, that's correct. He said, please tell me about your story. Tell me. And, you know, I shared bits and pieces with him. And, of course, his one of his passions was history. And so we were sharing history, and we were sharing, you know, and I was telling him all about how beautiful Islam is and how wonderful and whatever. And we had about 5 minutes. And he said to me, he said, you know, I actually stay in Spain. And he said, you know, Spain is filled with the beauty of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and I know. He said, I know this is a beautiful religion. And I have a feeling he was actually Jewish, because he looked Jewish. And, you know, it was just so wonderful to be able to interact. And we need more of those moments.
So Khadija, okay, let me ask Sister Rehana this question, and I'm going to come to you as well and ask the same question. Sister Rehana, have you found yourself in a position where somebody comes up to you and is almost, you know, they really want to know about Islam. They want to know your story. They want to know how you came to this religion. What is it in that process that you could do now being Muslim that could perhaps, you know, get them to look at Islam very differently to what they've learned from the media?
I think, you know, there is a lot of interest, definitely.
Yes.
And I think I always use those moments to explain to people the clarity of Islam.
Yeah.
That if you are looking for direction in your life and if you are looking for answers in your life, this is the place where you will find it. And Islam, yes, they are parts of Islam that are very strict and are very challenging. But those challenges don't come in a shroud of confusion. The commandments of Allah are very clear.
Mm.
And that is something that was very appealing to me. And the fact that Islam is a journey, and the fact that if you had to look at the Prophet and all of the Sahaba, radiallahu anhu, you will find yourself in one of them. And that is the most beautiful part of it. And so it's that clarity that I always speak to people about. Always to say to them that, do you know that the Quran as it is today is exactly the same as it was on the day the Prophet ﷺ, or in the period that the Prophet ﷺ revealed it. You know, that is a miracle. So explain to people that all of the prophets before came with miracles. And when it came to Prophet ﷺ, the Quran is his miracle. And we are fortunate because we can hold a miracle in our hands. That is what I say to people. And it always resonates with them because these are things that they don't know about our religion.
Absolutely. It becomes
and, yeah, and it's that clarity. People in this world are lost, and they are looking for direction.
Yeah,
and they are looking for answers. If you're a person like me,
absolutely.
I'm very logical. You know, and that's why Islam appeals to me, because I can go back and I'm like, okay, this was revealed on this day. And this is why it was revealed. And to
and
me, that's what I need. I don't need to... Everything I have to do doesn't need to be easy. I don't even need to agree with all of it, but I need to know where it came from.
Okay. Yes.
And that, I think, also appeals to the younger generation, and it appeals to the way the world is thinking now.
Absolutely. Sister Khadija, your viewpoint on that?
You know, I'll share another story. At the same advertising agency, you know, we were all very busy up and down and doing our thing. And all of a sudden, in the creative department, somebody said to me, "Tell me, you know, why do you cover your head?" And I started to explain to them why. And, you know, I want to put it in context because, you know, in the advertising industry, everybody is quite out there and... You know, I just remember this most beautiful young girl looking at me, and she said to me, "But I could do that. I could live like that." And then I started to explain to her the rights that women do have in Islam, what our lives really consist of. You know, you could see the yearning in their eyes from these women. And I'll never forget when she said, "But I could live like that."
Yeah, it's a light that comes on almost. That, you know,
you know,
I thought, yeah. It's a light that comes on in their brain to say, you know what, this is what I thought of you. I thought you were oppressed. I thought you were covered because you were forced to do so. And then somebody like you goes and explains this to a creative. I mean, we all know creative departments, like you said, people are very, they're out there. They need, because that's the way, you know, creativity works, I guess, in advertising, etc. And somebody says to you, "But this is my choice, and this is what it's for, and this is how it empowers me." And then suddenly, it's a very different viewpoint.
And I do feel that, you know, a lot of the women are tired of having the men's eyes on them. But yet they don't know another way.
You know.
And the men are tired of having to look at women. And I'll share two more stories with you. I was in a boardroom at one of the top advertising agencies. The boardroom was full of all these creative people. And there I was sitting, I had my bio on and my hijab, and, you know. And I'll never forget, I walked out and got into the parking lot, and somebody came past me, one of the males came past me. And he said to me, "You know, I just want to tell you, you look beautiful. You look absolutely beautiful." And it wasn't a beauty where you could see my hair or my makeup or my figure. He was just like, "Oh, this is so refreshing." And then once, another time, when I walked into Tiger Brands, and also once again in a boardroom, we had a final overview on a job we had done, and the boardroom was full of people. And the actual person that was running the meeting, when I walked in, our Saka, she looked at me and she said, "You know about Islam. I want you to tell me about Islam."
We've got to run with final comments. We've got 2 minutes to go, and then my engineer has warned me that I've got to finish 11:55 so he could get his ads in. Inshallah, I'm hoping that in the future we could have another program, get enlightened. There was a question that I wanted to ask as well, just quickly. Like I said, we've got a minute and we'll wrap up. If we talk about dealing with non-Muslim family members, and we said, Rihanna, you mentioned that it can get, you know, we've got to be careful of what we say to those who have reverted because they still have non-Muslim family members. What are some of the limits that are difficult to uphold, and particularly with regard to sort of religious festivals? How do you work around that process?
I can say that, you know, for me personally, from what I found out, upholding the limits is not challenging. It's managing people's expectations that are challenging. So, for example, to go to a funeral, from everything that I found out, and I stand corrected because I'm not an expert, you basically just should not participate in any ritual. And that is standard across anything in Islam. You're not supposed to associate partners with Allah, and you're not supposed to participate in any ritual. So for me, it was not complicated. I will attend a wedding or a funeral or a festival or anything like that, and I just won't be part of the rituals at all. And for me, that was very simple and cut and dry, and I had no moral dilemma or anything about it because I do feel that my iman is strong, and I know what my intentions are to support my family and to not alienate myself from my family and to not break family ties, which are all things that Islam stands for. But I think there is a lot of superstition amongst the community where, from the Muslim side, people would not even, you know, be present at something like this. They would not even attend a non-Muslim funeral. And that's where the challenges came for me, where, you know, I feel like Islamically I'm not contravening anything because I'm not participating in the ritual, but my family also does expect that I'm not supposed to be present at the ritual at all. Those are the gray areas that you need to navigate around. And I just think it really depends on, you know, how firm of character you are in being able to stand up for the things that you believe in or you want to do, and how much of support you have from, you know, your spouse and your family. But that is the gray area. It is a very challenging area when you have your Muslim community saying you can't even be present. And in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, my dad just passed away. I have a mother and sisters. How can I not be present? There's more to these things than just the ritual. There's the support that you give your family. There's the support that you need for yourself.
Yes.
And that
is something the community needs to understand from the perspective of somebody who's coming to Deen and the rest of their family being
non-Muslim. And I think also we need to give people in these situations, instead of a blanket, you're not supposed to do this, and then you're sitting there with, like, the grief of losing somebody you love,
as well,
and then
the
added weight of, oh my God, am I displeasing Allah? Am I incurring some sin? Am I also displeasing my husband and my in-laws? And, you know, instead of you sitting with all of that, we should be giving people tools that will, you know, enable them to deal with it, to be able to say, you know what, you can go, but just excuse yourself from this. And even excusing yourself at a wedding or a funeral, you are not necessarily in the position to say, you know, because I'm Muslim, I can't be a part of this, so you guys carry on. You know, that is not the time frame to be able to have these discussions. But you equip someone to say, okay, when this starts, why don't you go and get busy with something else? Go and clean up the kitchen or you know, show that you're still there and you're busy with some act. And then later on, you can have the conversation. But we should be equipping people and also helping them to navigate the questions that they're going to be getting from their non-Muslim family.
So basically trying to get around it without, you know, conflicting with your deen, but still being there for the family.
And also to realize that... Yeah. Oh, sorry, are we out of time?
we've got to end today's program, inshallah.
No problem.
Because I'm going to give you like 10 seconds, Sister Khadija, as well as Sister Rehana. Sister Khadija, to finish off today's program, inshallah, some advice quickly to our listeners.
I think, you know, you need to understand that, when you become a Muslim, many times you are stripped of your social identity. And this is, you know, this is a difficult thing. So it's not that the Muslim community are harsh or anything like that. They're so filled with warmth and love. But to understand, as our sister said before, to understand what we go through when we're having to deal with our non-Muslim families, it's a huge challenge.
Sister Rehana, to finish off quickly.
I'm just going to give a little bit of advice to our revert sisters out there, is that really find a tafsir class in your area and please join it, because all of the challenges that you have to face really become easier when you develop a love for the Prophet and a love for the Quran, and when your intentions are to please Allah, everything gets so much easier. All of these challenges, dealing with your non-Muslim family, dealing with your Muslim family, dealing with the social changes, it really just becomes easier when your intentions are made properly.
May Allah make it easy for everyone who is in the journey, through the journey, etc., in terms of becoming Muslim, being Muslim, and even those of us who are born Muslim. May Allah make it that we have, you know, that we continue to learn daily. To our listeners, we've come to the end of today's program. To my panelists, Jazakallahu Khairan for making time on the Sunday morning. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
وعليكم السلام.